An Imperial pilot, one of the cargo drivers he defected yesterday, is telling people they're making a weapon. The Kyber crystals, that's what they're for.
What kind of weapon?
Look, I have to go.
What kind of weapon?
A planet killer!
Welcome to the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, Star Wars Retrospective Series.
Halt! Stop right there.
Join Garrett.
Is it really you?
Matt?
Are we not still friends?
And Adam?
You seem unsettled.
As they review each film in the Star Wars saga.
What have you really brought me?
From George Lucas's original trilogy.
That was only an inkling of its destructive potential.
All the way through the Disney sequels and side stories.
That all of them?
The boys will look at each film individually and decide how this popular film series holds up.
That's a war zone.
Search Your Feelings, podcast listeners.
My condolences.
The Percolated Media Star Wars Retrospective begins now.
You may fire when ready.
Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, because they don't think anyone knows the meaning of anthology. Released December 16th, 2016. Budget on this, $265 million. Box office, $1.05 billion. Yes, it crossed the billion-dollar mark. And this is directed by Gareth Edwards. I am joined by the one and only friend of mine for over 30 years, Adam Bunch. Adam, how are you?
I'm wonderful, sir. It's about time to, you know, get something out of the Star Wars Skywalker saga, and let's do some Star Wars. War being the apropos word for this one.
After last week, who knows? Who knows how this is going to go? And fresh off his appearance on the Horror Returns podcast, our buddies over there, the one and only Matthew Goudreau. Matt, how are you, sir?
Gold leader standing by.
Rogue One, or as they call it, the Rogue One. Like I mentioned last week, I was not excited for this. I gotta say, these trailers came out. I saw an AT-AT in the goddamn trailer on a beach, and I'm like, what the fuck? Adam, you mentioned this last week, but why don't you go over your excitement for this?
It would have been hard to be more excited than I was for this film. A couple reasons. Rogue One. I know who Rogue One is. Well, I know who Rogue One was. I know the character that is Rogue One. That being Wedge Antilles or Wes Janson when Wedge is off doing something else. So I was looking forward to a war-type film in this universe because this felt like they were finally bringing the EU, which was decades of my Star Wars history, to the big screen, and I was really, really excited. The only issue, if you want to call it that I had was the person involved in this film that so many people were excited about, that being Gareth Edwards. And I got one reason that I wasn't excited for that guy, and that reason is Gojira. I know we may get to it at some point, but I loathe that freaking Godzilla film.
And I find it to be really, really underrated.
I know.
But yeah, we're gonna get to that eventually. Matt, what about you, sir? The trailers are released. How excited are you for Rogue One?
In concept and from the announcement on, I was in a way more excited for this than I was for Force Awakens for two reasons. One, looked like they were putting the war in Star Wars, which really is the aspect that intrigues me. And number two, unlike Adam, I really liked that Godzilla movie he made. So that intrigued me as far as the person helming this much more than J.J. Abrams helming a Star Wars movie. But I have to give Disney sort of a backhanded compliment, which is not going to be the first time I do this. I love that they found a way to make a prequel in Star Wars without directly calling it prequel because it's such a dirty word to the minds of fans. That notwithstanding, I did have some not huge concerns, but the thing that excited me the most, finally, a Star Wars movie with no lightsabers, with no Jedi, with no Force. It's going to be a ragtag group of heroes having to use their actual resources and intellect to go against the Empire, not the Force. So that was definitely the thing that fascinated me the most. And I was pretty excited, but I was sort of recovering from a concussed state in 2016 between the election, between Batman v Superman, between Suicide Squad, between yelling at people over Captain America Civil War. It was a very contentious time to be a movie fan.
It sure was, which leads me to what I ended last week's podcast on, which is what this movie really did with my relationship with people in the last community we were a part of. The reason I say that is because I was the one who said, I didn't like this idea, and I didn't like the trailers. When I was a kid, I loved playing out everything with my toy figures that this movie does. And to me, whether there were novels or not, I was okay with my version of how Leia got the plans to the Death Star. I know there are tons of novels that detail this already. And I didn't care to see how that one paragraph in that fucking crawl played out in this movie. This was coming out at a time when diversity was a huge topic in Hollywood, and we had the Oscars so white complaints, which, by the way, I completely agree with. There needs to be more diversity. But when I looked at this cast, and I looked at the magazine covers that were coming out around this time, it was so obvious that Kathleen Kennedy and company were placating to that mentality, which is why I was railing that this was a pandering project from the start. So that had me kind of itchy going into this. I just didn't care. But I'll say this. I think this is interesting because we are not going into Star Wars proper here. We're doing a whole different experiment. They announced, as we mentioned last week, they announced that they're going to do a movie a year. They're going to do one big Star Wars project, which was a life or death situation with all these huge characters, Luke Skywalker, everybody. And they're going to do these small projects. Matt, what do you think about that idea? That Disney was taking the idea of doing little Star Wars films on a $200+ million budget.
Not surprised whatsoever, because once you acquire something that has the reach of Star Wars worldwide, business mentality is to churn out as many as possible. But by doing so, I think this is definitely going to be a topic of conversation throughout these reviews, is that Star Wars was always an event. And I think I'm giving that a bit of an understatement, as we alluded to with our talks of Phantom Menace and even stuff like Empire Strikes Back, following up what was such a landmark movie. They were events. You had to wait.
Mm-hmm.
So by doing the opposite, you run the risk of milking the blood from the stone, and it loses its special feeling when they release. Now, you got around it with this case by being, no pun intended, sort of a pilot for the possibilities they could do. This is kind of like a test run of taking the Star Wars as a brand and trying to do something different with it. While at the same time, you were still going to have episodes 8 and 9. Had they announced the Han Solo movie around this? Okay, so we knew that was coming. And by comparison, I thought this was a better idea than doing a Han Solo movie. So I liked that this one was going to be the first one out of the gate. But you're right, I did think the casting was certainly a direct correlation to the controversy about diversity and inclusion. But I give it more of a pass in this because it's Star Wars. And, you know, it's a galaxy of creatures and aliens and people. So it was about time it got put into this. But let's also remember the year before there was all that controversy. Oh, my God, there's a black stormtrooper.
Oh, yeah.
Like that was a whole thing. So it is what it is. But I was not happy about doing one movie a year because we had seen when you do that, unless it's Harry Potter, where you have it's really a continuing story, which it was. Those I can justify. Star Wars, when you're doing outside of the trilogy format, you run the risk of diminishing returns and losing that excitement.
Adam, same question. You hear there's going to be a movie a year. You're excited to take your kids to Star Wars movies again, but one a year? Were you excited for that?
Was because the off stories, the anthologies, were supposed to be standalone one-off stories with a lower budget and, you know, something a little simpler. And they designated that, you know, you're going to have your saga and you're going to have other stuff. And if you're going to do it, I do think that's a wise idea. Look, Disney's got a problem because I think they've been trying to do that with Marvel and they still haven't figured that out. So yeah, I'm good with it. Not to mention, I like the ideas that they were going with because I thought I knew where they were going. But as I said last time also, this is where I start to have a big, big, big problem with not Kathleen Kennedy, because I think she not only is the right person, I think she was been the best person to helm Lucasfilm. I have a problem with those at Disney and those in the C-suite who do things like, hey, all those books you read for decades, they no longer count, they're no longer canon, making a big deal about it. And the reason is they're mining those resources like they're fucking spice on a moon and reinterpreting them without giving credit, without giving royalties, and without paying the people that wrote those stories. And they're just strip mining the parts they like and redelivering it. So I was excited until I saw the way that they were starting to handle the stuff that they were giving us.
Let's get a little bit into the backstory here. This is an idea that was actually launched, believe it or not, by a visual effects artist who worked for Lucasfilm around the time the prequels were going on. A guy by the name of John Knoll, if you watch any or all of the special features on the Star Wars discs or on Disney Plus, you'll see him pop up pretty frequently. He had the idea for this way back when they were doing the prequels. He brought it to Lucasfilm's attention and he did a 30-page treatment of it, and they kind of put it on the back burner. They're like, well, we're not going to do this now, maybe later. And then once Disney purchased Star Wars and Lucasfilm, he brought it back to their attention, and Kathleen Kennedy was all in on this idea. So he got the writer Gary Whitta, which Matt, you and I have covered a movie me and him wrote. In fact, I think it was the only other movie he wrote. You know what I'm talking about?
He was the co-writer of After Earth.
After Earth, the brilliant M. Night Shyamalan vehicle.
We should also mention, though, John Knoll, if you don't know, he's one of the co-creators of Photoshop.
Yeah.
Like, really, really smart guy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, watch the ILM documentary and you'll be blown away.
Yeah. So Gary Whitta did a treatment of this, and we also had Christian McQuarrie came in, did a treatment. Apparently Tony Gilroy, he did a treatment, and he did some reshoots that they did, which was a big topic around the time this was coming out. This thing was completed, and they still did a ton of reshoots up until about a month or so before the movie even came out. So, Matt, you're hearing all this behind-the-scenes stuff. It sounds like there's a lot going on. Are you still excited for this when you're hearing that, okay, we're having reshoots done, they must not be too happy with this? How are you feeling around this time?
I was having PTSD from Suicide Squad.
Oh, God. Yeah.
It was almost a very similar level of negative publicity. And I thought in the trailers they were trying to compensate that. And this is where I could really see the reshoots. I don't believe Darth Vader was meant to be in this movie. And I thought once they put him in the trailer, I'm like, all right, that's a reshoot. This is getting twisted. They're trying to put some more iconography into this. But I was willing still to give it the benefit of the doubt because I had seen, with the exception of like Edgar Wright and Ant-Man, they had been very... At the time, I thought they had done a respectable job with what they were doing with Marvel. We could argue about post this, but around that time, I gave them almost confidence on that front, so I felt like Star Wars was in good hands. But anytime you hear reshoots, it's nothing new. We've talked about this before. But when you have this many, you know, 5 weeks is a long time. You bring in Tony Gilroy, who also did, like, second unit direction on this. You have all these other writers like Scott Burns, Michael Arndt. Like, there's a lot. This thing went through a lot of hands. I mean, it's almost like the General Grievous of production teams. So I my confidence was a bit shaky, but I was still very anticipatory going into the movie.
Adam, are you still excited or are you nervous?
I'm starting to get worried at this point. I mean, this film did everything but bring in Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
To rewrite and reshoot. You might as well call this the assembly cut. But yeah, you start seeing completely different tones in trailers and you're like, huh, interesting. Regardless of when we get towards the end of this and how we feel, when your director and writers are off doing other things and you're making excuses in the press while you're having somebody else come in and reshoot for months, you can't sell that positively to people who know. Because he's working on this and working on that, so we're just doing some cleanup shots. Like, it doesn't pass the sniff test. And it was clear that what this movie was intended to be, you know, they weren't willing to have a $100 million movie gross $500-700 million. They demanded a $300 million movie to gross $2 billion. And that's just, you know what, that's all fucking C-suite executive meddling. And that's Zaslav shit for the way that things are going at Warner Brothers right now. And, yeah, you start to worry as to what was a good idea because you take a movie out of the hand of the auteurs and you put it in the hands of money men. And that's, I think, where this film kind of got taken away.
All right. So we get the Long Time Ago in a Galaxy Far, Far Away title, which I liked seeing, but we don't get a crawl. We just get this terrible Michael Giacchino's sting, and we start on the planet of Lemieux. Matt, do you think they should have had a crawl here?
No, because by doing so, you would have undermined this entire plot more than it already is, because I'm going to say this right now. I've alluded to my thoughts on this movie already. Biggest problem this movie had to overcome from its conception is the story itself, because this entire plot was summarized in a fucking paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not deemed important enough to delve into until now. So the fact that there's no title crawl, I'm like, oh, thank God. Because you would have undermined the movie if you had explained everything. Because, like I said, the biggest problem is the plot itself is very, 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 very thin.
Oh, I think you could have just taken that crawl from A New Hope, play it in reverse, and bam, you get your crawl.
There you go.
I think it was important to not do it. And I think you made a point of saying, this isn't your Skywalker saga. This isn't those. So I think it was an important note. That note being a very sour, as we get at the Lucasfilm logo. Oof, this score. But I think it was a smart choice, and I think it's a choice you had to make to not do a crawl.
All right. So we meet Jen, who's told to gather her things as they need to leave. And then we see Galen, played by Mads Mikkelsen, who we've reviewed before. He tells Jen that all he has done is done to protect her as they walk out. And Jen's mom says, trust the Force. So we do have the Force here. Okay.
Right, I'm getting pissed off already. it's not the fact that they mentioned the Force, which confused me because I always thought that was exclusively...
Yeah.
You know, like they, like when Han said it, I thought it was like in a sardonic, sarcastic, almost mocking type of way until he actually bought into it. But if you notice, when they're in their little, their hut, camera specifically focuses on that cup of blue milk.
Yes.
And this starts a trend in this movie. This is the Where's Waldo of Star Wars movies, where it is so obsessed with checking off these minuscule boxes so all the wetback fanboys can go, oh, I know what that is. And it infuriates me throughout this entire movie, and it starts immediately.
You're not trying to differentiate yourself if you're putting Easter eggs like that in a movie like this. Yeah, it doesn't know what the fuck it is. Adam, what about you? Were you upset at this?
I wasn't upset at that. I like seeing those Easter eggs because I'm in that universe, so I'm okay with that. I'm fine with the blue milk. I'm fine with even with the little, like, Stormtrooper doll, things like that. What I'm not okay with... And this is where the final, like, two trailers, because they, goddamn, they explained this entire movie, though, yes, we know it, in the couple trailers. I was worried that they literally made a hero, and it starts right here with Mads Mikkelsen, of making a hero out of the dude that built the Death Star. Like, I know what's going to go on from the second we meet him, and I'll lay my card on the table. I'll freaking lay my Sabbat card on the table right here. I hate everything about Galen Erso in this film. And that's an actor that I like, that I think could do some great things. I loathe his inclusion and what they make him do. And it starts right here at the beginning.
And we've seen Mads Mikkelsen do good things. I mean, go back to our Bond series that we did. He is a pretty good actor when he's into it. I don't think he's into this movie. I think he's sleepwalking through this role.
I think he's actually fine. His performance is not one of the things that bothers me in this movie, but I do share the same critique of Adam, where... You have to write yourself into a circle by trying to give us a kind of sympathy, whether he's forced into it or not, for a guy who makes something that is going to destroy and kill hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. That's just a tough thing to overcome, and I don't think the movie ever actually manages to pull that off for me. Because we don't know much about this guy. And that's a thing you could say about this movie. Like,
yeah.
Like, this movie does not prioritize characterization in the slightest.
You know what's funny about that? Because we just reviewed this movie last year, but they wanted to put him out to be kind of like an Oppenheimer kind of character, where, like, he's making this thing of destruction, and you kind of want to get an idea of how he feels bad about that. But I don't get that at all in this movie.
No, I don't get any semblance of regret from Galen, his side, at all.
So we then see Galen. He goes to Krennic, and Krennic asks Galen to come back as they are so close to greatness and bringing peace to the galaxy. Now, Krennic, he's played by Ben Mendelsohn. Me and Jen watched The Outsider earlier this year. He is so good in that series. But around this time, he was still playing kind of sleazy people. Like, he's always been kind of the bad guy. But I think of everybody in this movie, I think he stands out. I like Ben Mendelsohn in this.
Yeah, he was in his Gary Oldman phase mm-hmm. of just playing villains because there was Dark Knight Rises, Ready Player One was a little bit after this. And I think that was actually one of the brilliant things they did when they cast him in Captain Marvel, when you thought he was the villain, and they twist that. I think he's a great actor, but Krennic gets nothing to do in this movie, and the inclusion of Tarkin and Vader makes him such a... he's a cardboard cutout villain. There's something interesting there, but he's routinely undermined by their presence, so he doesn't get the opportunity to actually be fleshed out or interesting.
Yeah, he's a...
I think Mendelsohn is doing the best job he can because I think he's a great actor, but I think Krennic is one of the biggest missed opportunities in this particular movie, and a movie that has a ton of them, to be frank.
Yeah, he's a pawn in this and nothing more.
I'm right there, and the reason is, Bat hit it. He's undermined by two other characters that are bigger bads that we've come to know. You can have one or the other, you can minimize them, but when all we have is Krennic being an underling of the other two, and all we get is Ben Mendelsohn doing Ben Mendelsohn things, okay, I can see him do this and it does other things. So as much as to steal a line, we were on the verge of greatness. We were this close. But they took it right out from under us, because I think he could have been an amazing villain. I still think he'd be an amazing Dr. Doom, but they pissed him away on Talos, unfortunately. But yeah, Mendelsohn has great potential. And I'm going to lead that right into your next notes. Potential is a problem, because who does he have with him? These characters that are like upgraded stormtroopers that we'd never see again.
I was going to say, we've never seen a dark stormtrooper, have we?
Not unless you've played the Battlefront video games.
Yeah.
Why does he have his own private security force? When, as we find out, he's in charge of weapons development, but you think he'd just be a scientist, where he'd have maybe one bodyguard, not his own private security force, because, even Tarkin doesn't have that. I mean, Tarkin in A New Hope has Vader at his beck and call, so that's a way to get around it. But they're also not clear on the hierarchy of, where does Krennic actually rank. It's, because when he goes to Scarif later on, he's in charge of that whole base, basically. But how important is that in the grand scheme of the Empire?
See, he's in this suit where he's almost a Grand Moff. And you got to remember, Tarkin's not a Moff. He's not a Grand Moff. They kind of retcon that later. But Krennic should have been Grand Moff Krennic. And Tarkin undermining him shows the brilliance of Tarkin, because his outfit is really, really close to it, and it could justify a lot of things. But you have these Death Troopers stolen from the title of a Star Wars novel.
Yeah, a stupid one, by the way, because it's about stormtrooper zombies.
So much fun. It's stupid, but it's fun. But you have these elite stormtroopers, and guess what? 5 minutes after the end of this movie, which is A New Hope, you no longer have these elite stormtroopers. This is the problem with putting, hey, we got a great idea for these things. If you had badass troopers, you would not eliminate them and go backwards. It's stupid. The design is awesome, other than their voice, which makes no sense. But it's infuriating, because you never see these guys again.
And by the way, if you go to a planet that has all this black dirt, wear an all-white suit. That's a good idea.
And why did you park so far away from his house?
Yeah!
You got my note. Yep. This thing is shot beautifully. The images on this are absolutely gorgeous. I love the look of this film.
Yeah,
here on this planet.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my notes too, and I did have that compliment as well. I mean, Gareth Edwards used to be a visual effects artist himself, so he knows how to compose a shot. I don't know if he knows how to direct, but he knows how to compose a shot. You are absolutely right, Adam. Out of all the Star Wars films we have reviewed so far, this is the most gorgeous of them all. This has a great look to it.
I definitely prefer this to Force Awakens.
Yeah. Because
Force Awakens has the Terminator 2 problem for me, where it's a little too polished. This feels really like a lived-in universe. And I kind of wish Force Awakens had this kind of visual style, because it really would have brought home the oppression of the First Order, that they had brought back doom and gloom to the galaxy. None of my problems with this movie really are on the technical front, outside of two major things that I have also moral issues with. But as far as the cinematography, the costume design is great. Everything looks consistent with the original trilogy. But at the end of the day, it's in service of a movie that I don't feel ever justifies its existence.
Lyra comes out with a gun and is killed by Krennic's men. Krennic screams for his troops to find Jen, who takes off and hides in a cave. And Edwards is trying something with this, with the symbolism of her going down these stairs. And we have it a lot in this movie where we have ladders where she's going up and climbing up out. And I do think they're trying to say something with that.
She's going down a torpedo port.
Yeah.
Or an exhaust port. We're an exhaust port up, exhaust port down. Yeah. Exhaust port up, exhaust port down.
Yes. Down periscope, up periscope.
We see a stormtrooper doll, which has shockingly remained as wide as can be on this black dirt. Jen hears hears footsteps and is then rescued by Saw. And then we get...
Barrett, did you know anything about this character, by the way?
Yeah, I know he was a part of the Clone Wars. He's like the only character who's been previously established, isn't he?
Well,
but besides the Vader and Tarkin, of course.
Yeah. For the new ones, yeah, and they actually brought Forrest Whitaker back into Rebels when they did that to make the character older like he is here. Because Clone Wars is obviously a couple decades before, and Rebels runs right about the time that this does. It kind of butts up right before it. And they made a big deal about, ooh, someone from Rebels is coming, someone from Rebels is coming. Spoiler, there's a couple people from Rebels, you know, if you know where to look. But I was wondering how many people would, especially you, would be like, okay, when you bring Forrest Whitaker into something, he stands out as Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah, right. We then get the fucking most generic theme by Giacchino here. The music to this movie is just god-awful. And they brought him in, and they didn't bring in Williams, which I get. You know, you're trying to differentiate it from the rest of the Star Wars movies. I get that. But this guy has done every single fucking franchise, and I've complimented him a little bit in the past, but here, his music does absolutely nothing for me, except when he brings back the older themes. Adam, how do you feel about the score to this?
I feel like Michael Giacchino has so much work that he's doing in so many places that this was the beginning of AI that somebody typed in, do a Michael Giacchino Star Wars theme, and this thing was spat out, and nobody checked it. This thing is bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, even just the notes that they use and the... You're like, oh, it's using the wrong key. Like, yeah, everything feels off, which I guess is kind of like this film. It's here with the score. You're like, it just feels not where it should be. And that nobody went, hey, give that opening sting another take. Because, I mean, I don't know anybody that cheered at this because it's like the orchestra's warming up and it's just not there because you're like, eh, that's what you went with? Bad choice. Really bad choice.
The music in this movie makes it feel more like a fan film, even more than the actual story does. Like, it's so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my joke at the time when I came out of the theater, was I said it was the most expensive fan film ever made. And it just has a non-Star Wars feel to it when they're trying to make us feel it in other places. It's just weird.
I do think you need to have a different theme. You know, you have to differentiate yourself. I completely agree with that. So it's not that choice. It's that this score, and especially this opening rousing theme, is bad. There's a difference between doing something different and I don't like it because it's different, and something being bad. This is bad.
We cut to 15 years later on the Ring of Kafreen, with Jen as an angry young adult and Cassian Andor learning of a defection and how everything is falling apart.
So, big problem here. All of her characterization happens off screen. What has she been doing in the last 15 years?
Yeah, this is a huge problem I have with this movie. And she was the source of a lot of reshoots because when these trailers were released, she was looked at as too prickly. She was looked at as, well, we can't identify with her. So they came up with these ways of making her appeal to the audience. And here's the issue, boys. You're making a war film, and you're also making a Star Wars film. Now, in Star Wars, everything in those sets of movies is based on emotion. And as we've covered earlier this year, war films usually aren't based on emotion. So you put this character in, it just completely changes the tone and everything else that revolving around this movie. And you're trying to make us identify with her, but there's nothing in here that I really identify with. And what has she gone through? You're actually right, Matt. What has she gone through? What prison system has she gone through? We learn she's been imprisoned. Why? It makes no sense. And I don't see this character as hard. I think Felicity Jones is giving her all. I'm not faulting the actress. I'm faulting the writing.
I blame her as well. I think, say what you want, and this is my thesis statement on this movie. Let's say you have this story, and you bring in Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, Oscar Isaac, those characters. I actually think it would enhance this movie. because they're charismatic, they're fun to watch, and yeah, there's not a lot of characterization in Force Awakens, but, you know, it's introducing those characters, so it kind of has that excuse. If you put her as the main character in Force Awakens and these supporting characters into that plot, the movie's made worse. I think the characters in general are the biggest source of grief I have with this movie. I don't care about any of them. There's no backstory to any of them. And you, when you have stock types, which they all are to some degree, you got to get people either that are really charismatic or give them backstories so I'm invested in them. There's none of that here. And as a result, I'm largely bored and disinterested when things happen to them. Use Jyn as an example. Okay, she's her own Maverick type because she's not with the Rebels. She's not with the extremists with Saw Gerrera. And she's clearly not a fan of the Empire because of her relationship with her father. So what does she stand for? What makes her unique? Why should I give a shit, especially because her relationship with her father seemingly turns on a dime? She has the Madeline Swan problem in Spectre of going from fuck my dad to I want to know everything about him and avenge his death. All the character work in this movie is non-existent, and it's a hole that this movie cannot dig its way out of. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the thing is with this film, and Matt, you bring up a really good point. There's no chemistry between them all. I don't know how you did a chemistry test because it doesn't exist. That's a really good point. Never thought of it that pointedly until you brought it up. Because, yeah, you bring in the new three from Force Awakens, and I do think you have a different film here where you kind of root for the people. And maybe they didn't do chemistry tests or went against type because this is supposed to feel off-putting, but you can't make it feel off-putting to the audience, and it does. Yeah, I don't mind Felicity Jones in this. I like her enough, but I do feel, you know what, this is going to be something like more for the end of this discussion, but this type of story needs to be more of a mini-series if you're going to do it this way. Trying to cram all this in the way you're doing it, introduce so many people, and bring it back old ones, you don't have the road you need to tell the story. Not competently.
I am going to bring something up that's probably going to get a lot of people pissed at me. But
this is Star Wars, after all.
Yeah. I think it starts here, I'm going to really get into this next week. I think this character is a big result of Kathleen Kennedy's influence on this franchise. I think it was kind of her mandate to have a female as the main lead of this, and I think they really go out of their way to try to show her being heroic, but it just doesn't work. I'm not basing this on anything except hearsay, but I just feel that influence. Matt, do you feel that influence on this movie?
Unfortunately, yes. This has the problem of movies like Sucker Punch, certainly not to that degree, where just because you put a firearm in a woman's hand does not make her a strong character. And also, she has not done any favors by the amount of speechifying she has to do later on in this movie. That is so hokey, even for Star Wars.
Yeah.
And because there's no pretense to her character or a baseline for me to connect with her on, her arc is baffling, and there's clearly something lost in translation. So yeah, I think this is a Kennedy mandate, but I don't feel about her the way I felt about Helena in Dial of Destiny, where I wanted to just, you know, burn her at the stake like a witch.
I think the multiracial casting is a thing. I don't know if that's Kennedy or the entire executive change, but I'm good with that. I'm perfectly fine with that. In fact, I encourage it. I think, to your point, I think this thing was reshot and cut up so much. I think they took anything good out of her performance, what she was supposed to be, and put her into somebody who was going to do nothing but speeches. They turned her into Mon Mothma for 3/4 of this film. She's going to stand there and say things, which is ironic because we have Mon Mothma back in this movie.
Yeah, right. We then go to the moon of Jeddah, where we learn of an urgent message. We then cut to an Imperial labor camp in Wobani.
I actually have a note. They fucking Russo brothered the shit out of this movie. We are 12 minutes in. We're at our fifth different planet where I have to see like some weird name up on screen. They started this shit with Captain America Civil War, and Disney has continued it in all their live action things where it's like, hey, we're just gonna go to random places we cooked up in a freaking room and just throw a name up on screen and hope you care. What? Oh my god, I hate this. I hate it in Civil War, I hate it in Guardians of the Galaxy, and I hate it here.
Yeah, the constant location changing is also off-putting because these planets we have never seen before. I don't think any of them were shown in the original trilogy or the prequels outside of Yavin. That's the only one where I'm like, oh, I know where that is because it's designed exactly the same as it was. But
I think when we get there, they don't put the name up on yet.
No, they do. They do.
Okay, they do.
You already have characters I'm not invested in. And by putting them in these environments that also change every 2 minutes, it makes it even harder for me to feel, okay, what is the status quo? Because all the important information we're told. We hear the pilot defects, but we don't actually see it because we saw that in Force Awakens with Finn leaving the Stormtrooper unit, but we can't double down here and actually, you know, show this character of Bodhi actually doing something. We have to be told because this movie preoccupies telling versus showing.
The first 30 to 40 minutes of this movie is fucking confusing with how many times we have jumped from planet to planet and place to place. And Matt, I do have to say, you know, you complain a lot that we've gone to Tatooine so many times, but yet here you're also complaining that we've gone to different systems and you don't like that. What is there a middle ground there?
Yeah, spend more than 5 minutes on a goddamn planet.
Hang on. I don't want to be undercut here. I hate the fact that we keep going back to Tatooine too.
I know. I know you do.
And don't pin that on me.
No. I was going to throw it to Adam too. Don't worry. I was just throwing it to you first because you've been very vocal about it as well. But Adam, what about you, man? I mean, is there a middle ground? Are you satisfied with this? You're obviously not satisfied with Tatooine. Where's the middle ground?
There is a middle ground. I don't need an establishing shot done in CG with a name, a title, and coordinates to bring me to a planet that lasts 180 seconds. Okay, we get Jyn. We rescue Jyn. We never go back to this place. So I don't care about the planet. Jeddah, it makes perfect sense to do it for that planet. You don't need to do it with everyone.
And they chose Jeddah because it sounds like Jedi.
Exactly.
I feel like I'm in the Star Wars encyclopedia book where I'm flipping a page and it's got all the coordinates and names and shit. I don't need that in my movie.
This movie feels like it was written by the committee who expanded Wikipedia.
Jyn is being hauled away by troops, but she's then rescued by former Imperial droid K2SO. This was a character that was pretty liked when this movie was out. I mean, it was one of the only real universal compliments about the movie was this character. Earlier this year, we reviewed Dale. Now we're reviewing Tucker. How do we feel about K2SO?
I've been ridiculously anti-droid on a lot of films because they just get in the way, they're annoying, and they use them way too much. Starting here with K2SO brings my love of some of the droids out. I absolutely love everything that they do with this character. Alan Tudyk, who I've got some big issues with as a person, I think he's phenomenal. I think he does great things. I'm glad he does the mocap. I could sit and watch the actual behind the scenes of K2SO over and over, and I have. I don't have statues of any Star Wars droids except for two. Chopper, because you gotta support Chopper, and K2SO. This is not only a droid I like, this is my favorite droid in Star Wars. I fucking love this guy. And I do from the moment he's introduced.
Matt, what about you? How do you feel about K2SO here?
I think it's kind of a mixed messaging because this movie wants to have its cake and eat it too.
Yes.
Because it so wants you to take Star Wars seriously. You know, it's gritty, it's dark, it's edgy. But yet we have a character here whose only purpose is comic relief. And it feels like, oh, we can't go too dark, so we need to have a character who's basically the studio group thing. He's basically Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy. Where he's here to take things literally and just be awkward when the characters are trying to talk to him and make snidey comments. So I feel like it's, like I said, mixed messaging. I think it's a good performance, good vocal work. I appreciate that it's motion capture and not just a digitally rendered computer effect. But I just think this movie it's trying to please everybody. And I don't feel like they, except for the hardcores, if you're like me, who's a relative casual for the most part, I feel like I'm getting overloaded with too much at once.
We're learning some of Jyn's infractions as Mon Mothma and Cassian, they interrogate her about the location of Saw Gerrera. So this character of Saw, this is a thing that bugs me about this movie as well, is that we're learning that she looked up to him, but she hates him, but they want her to go to him. Like, they don't explain this at all either.
This is where I get really confused. So they need her to go see Saw because she could at least get an audience with him. But ultimately, they need her to go get the pilot to get the message because it's connected to her father. I am very confused by exactly what they want her to do. Because ultimately the issue, their priority is to get her father, but even that gets not as it seems. It's just, for something that is so simple, God, this movie's fucking convoluted.
It is, to a T.
One, the character of Saw Gerrera, for those that don't know, in Clone Wars, like, he's part of the rebellion. He's part of, he's basically Andor, Cassian Andor. He does these things, but he becomes extremist, and he goes out and kills a lot of people, kind of like the rebellion does. But they kind of deem him as a terrorist more than freedom fighter. So he's on the outs from the rebellion. The problem here is, okay, so Jen is in Imperial custody in jail. So the Imperials, the Empire, with all their knowledge, don't understand that she's the daughter of Galen Erso, but the fledging rebellion, with their scrappiness, I guess, know that she's the daughter of Galen Erso and where she is and how to go get her. This is just, it's problematic. But yeah, when you come to, we're going to break her out to go because we need to meet Saw Gerrera because he won't be met by anybody because he's, but we know where he is. And it's, man, the head bone's connected to the neck bone, connected to the shoulder bone, connected. This shit's just, there is too much here. Like I said, miniseries, you could have had some great shit with it, and if as long as you don't PG it up. But this is, it's, you're making your audience work way too hard.
We're learning Saw has caused many problems of trust involving her father, and their goal is to stop the construction of a new Imperial weapon. Hey, Bail Organa, Jimmy Smits, complete with Leia theme. I thought they were trying to make us completely forget the prequels.
Well, that was The Force Awakens. Basically, that was kind of the mission statement of that movie. This at least acknowledges the prequels, and I do have to admire that.
Yeah, me too.
But I still don't give a fuck about this character.
Yeah, same.
It's like, yeah, he's here. What do you fucking do? And he has a line later on that made me want to jab pencils into my ears. But yeah, I'm like, okay, this is just more, oh, I know that guy. Check that box.
Did he just wander in costume? And they said, sure, I guess.
Oh, he's like Hudson, where he doesn't take that off.
Yeah, exactly. Since NYPD Blue, this has been his thing.
Like, who is this for? Jesus, war. What is it good for? What is Jimmy Smith's...
Poor Jimmy Smith. We're learning a little bit more about K2SO as Andor is giving orders to kill Galen if he sees him.
This type of stuff right here, and the problem is you better be paying attention or leaving your closed captioning on because some of this shit goes quick.
Yeah.
I like this type of stuff. And this, like I said, maybe, you know, draw this out into 6 hours, is this type of dirty war, even when it's justified, I think has a discussion and a place. I think Disney is scared to have it. But I think that this is some good stuff that unfortunately is undermined by so many things. But this, smart, important, and unfortunately just goes away.
I just think it's stupid to do something really exploring the shades of gray in a franchise that has been entirely preoccupied with black versus white,
yes,
good versus evil. It's personified by the light side and the dark side. So to do something like this in Star Wars, if you are going to do this, it needs to be much better executed than it is here. It's also not consistent because we see Cassian shoot that guy in the beginning, which I'm totally okay with. I like that we're seeing, you know, he's sort of like Han when you see him in A New Hope.
Oh, yeah, complete with outfit. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the outfit. He's got a similar blaster, but he gets the order. But when he has the opportunity to do it and he doesn't do it, I call bullshit based on what's been established already. And what's there to justify him not taking the shot later on is as lazy as it gets.
Yeah, we'll get to that scene. Oh, don't have things to say. Jen gets a blaster and the droid doesn't. And Andor is questioning where she got it and if she can be trusted with it.
So she, was that contraband that she got back?
Yeah.
Did she take that off a table? Like, he's also way too trusting of her. To give her a blaster makes him look incredibly stupid.
We cut to Bonesaw in a very weird Forrest Whitaker performance. He's putting on an oxygen mask like Dennis Hopper in Blue Velvet. Like, what is this goddamn character? Can somebody please explain this?
I got no justification.
Okay.
Because, yeah, they end up animating him this way, but he's been hurt. Okay. He's just, you know what? He wants to ham it up. I guess they're letting him do it, but... I just don't like anything with Saw Gerrera in this. Mm.
This is not the type of performance you have in this kind of movie.
No.
This is such a left field. It does not mesh with anything else in this movie because he is playing this very theatrical. right down to the,
I'm going to do the thing of wheezing to sound old and tired.
And the reshoots are obvious because in the trailers, he doesn't have this wig.
Yeah.
I noticed that right away.
Your reshoot point, this would be a fun movie to take a shot every time you could spot a reshoot. Because you're not going to last half an hour before you're flat on the ground. And there's a lot in this film you can pick apart. Just reshoot, reshoot, reshoot.
All right, guys. Let's get to it. We have been talking about this probably since this movie was out. Me and Matt and Adam, sometimes you reference it in a lot of the retrospectives we do. It's time to talk about it. We cut to Krennic looking at the progression of the Death Star with this video game character they're calling Peter Cushing's Tarkin. I hate this. I hate this so much. I know they got the estate's permission for it, but here's the thing. If I'm looking at this character, I'm looking at it from a point of view of, okay, that's not a character. That character just looks different. They could have done this different. They could have matted out his lines a little bit. They could have matted out his wrinkles. They could have made him more believable. Why bother with this? This is stupid.
So I have the moral grandstanding issue with just doing this in general. Opens up a whole can of worms with actors and their likeness. On principle, I have issue. I would have been totally okay with he doesn't turn around and you just see him in the reflection, because we know who that is.
I thought for sure that's what they were going to do.
That I'm totally okay with, and you just get a person to do the voice. But when he turns around, it's the instant uncanny valley. It's not as bad as Jeff Bridges in Tron Legacy. The technology's gotten better, but the problem is that it's still the dead eyes. They look like those Robert Zemeckis motion capture movie characters. I know he's not there, and the easiest thing to do, because this movie shows we are perfectly okay with recasting. You know, Mon Mothma, different actress, same one from Revenge of the Sith. But they've shown they're okay with recasting characters. Cast Christopher Eccleston, who has a very strong resemblance to Peter Cushing, put some prosthetics on him, if you need to, and just have him play Tarkin. And I'm totally okay with this. As it is, I don't like it on principle. And like I said, it makes Krennic just a complete underling when he's supposed to be the big villain of the movie, at least in concept.
In listening to interviews with the animators and things, they said the hardest part of doing this character, believe it or not, was doing his legs. Because Peter Cushing requested that his legs not be shown on screen when he's this character. And so you never got to see how he moves. So they messed with that for a long time before they thought they finally got it right. But I don't agree with doing this at all. I think it just completely distracts you from the experience of watching this movie.
Matt, you know, I never thought of Eccleston. That's a great call. And you know now we're going to look at a young Tarkin series one day, so that's your fault. You would also get the Marvel connection by bringing him in. Before we get to him, this is one of my favorite shots in the movie, more or less all of Star Wars. That Star Destroyer emerging from blackness.
Yes.
And that light playing over it is one of my favorite shots, period. At this point, eight films. I think that thing is just astounding and gorgeous. Wow. I don't have the problem with Tarkin that a lot of people have. I don't. I agree he would have looked better just in a reflection. You could have done it that way, been okay with it. I agree that he takes away so much of the urgency from Krennic. There I have a problem with it. But his inclusion, and even the way he looks, for what they do, and knowing that he's dead, knowing that he's CG pasted over somebody, I don't have as much of an issue, even watching it this time. Wish it could have been better, but it does not rip me out like something else might do later on. I'm actually okay with it here. I think it's used too much, though. I think you could have had one scene, cut it off, and not see him again.
Yeah, because he's in the movie much more than I thought he'd be.
Yeah.
But also, they went through the trouble of having him in Revenge of the Sith in a non-speaking role.
Yes, and he looked great.
Yeah, and you went through the trouble there, but you don't do it here when he's actually, based on how this is written, vital to the plot.
Krennic tells Tarkin that he will not fail. We see flashes of Galen calming Jen down, as well as the beginning of the movie as Cassian wakes her up. They head to the destroyer, and we learn that the Kyber crystal is the fuel for the new weapon they are building. The thing used for lightsabers is apparently used for big fucking space stations of mass destruction.
Well, the Jedi probably killed as many people as the Death Star does.
Yeah, right.
So I like this idea that the Empire is taking the symbol of the Jedi and using it for their malicious purpose. I think that's actually a really interesting idea. But if Kyber crystals are really this common now, you'd think a bunch of people would have learned how to make lightsabers.
Yeah, one of my issues with is you take something that was special and magical and mystical with the Kyber crystal, and you just take it down to, you know what, we can go ahead and harvest it and put it in here. Just wait, because we're going to have a discussion again next week where I got a similar thought. Mm. And it's just, the problem is, it goes both ways. There's parts of their discussion with Kyber that I like. There's parts of it that I hate. But it brings me to one of the parts that I like, and one of the things that I really enjoy, is that it takes us to Jedha.
We see Borg Goet, which can feed into thoughts and highlight lies. What the fuck is this creature?
Hentai monster.
So this continues the somebody at Disney and Lucasfilm has a tentacle fetish.
Yep.
Because we had this with the monsters, the Han Solo was smuggling.
Yep.
We had this here. So it's supposed to be like, yeah, well, it's like a lie detector test.
Mm-hmm.
But they Saw has the line about like it's going to cause brain damage.
Yeah.
It has no bearing on the rest of the movie. It's in one scene when they're in the jail cell, and then he's totally fine.
Yeah. I have a feeling, I think what Forrest Whitaker is trying to do is with his performance is say that he's actually touched this creature himself, which is why he's kind of fucked up the way he is.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't get that.
No, I think it's whatever gas he's huffing is making him go crazy.
Exactly.
Spice, that's a great way to go, yeah. Okay, for those that don't, and I don't know if either of you watch, but I don't know. American Dad, the animated series. Stay with me. There's an episode where Jeff Fisher is lost in space, and they bring this creature out to plug tentacles into his mind to show people what he's thinking. It's called The Majestic. Beautiful song that goes with it. This thing looks exactly like that creature, and that came out years before this was done. So, what's his name? Ronald Chang, I think, that does all of the animation designs. Dude needs to stop watching hentai, to Matt's point. But also, this is the most off-putting, weird, stupid, in a movie that's too long. How do you not trim this shit out? Because it plays nothing into the rest of the film.
We're like 35 minutes into this movie, and I'm bored out of my mind.
Yeah.
Sitting on my couch rewatching this. Because I've only seen this movie twice before I did the rewatch for this. And I was sitting there going, wow, I am bored as can be.
Question for you, because you mentioned that The Force Awakens was the first movie that you and your partner saw. How did he feel about this one, the big fan?
Oh, Christian loves this. I love this movie. I don't get it. I said, honey, I love you, but you're wrong.
I hear that from some people that absolutely...
I do,
there's
too.
There's a big swath of people that put this as their favorite.
Yeah. I hear people put this as their second favorite all the time. So Saw is trying to get into the head of Bodhi. Meanwhile, Andor and Jen, they're moving along the streets of Jedha as they run into the pilot and walrus guy from A New Hope. What are they doing here? Aren't they supposed to be on Tatooine?
It's at least in the system.
I fucking hate this shit so much.
Yeah.
Here, to your point, this is the definition of pandering.
It is.
I mean, it's not the worst example in this movie. There's one coming up that made me go, oh, for fuck's sake, in the theater. It's not the one you're thinking of. It's not the one at the very end. But yeah, this is the kind of shit that, you know, it's a galaxy, and you just keep putting it in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. It's the same people. It's the same mailman. It's the same milk delivery guy. It's the same fucking people in something that's supposed to encompass a galaxy.
I think it would be one thing to have them in a bar, in a background scene as an Easter egg that you find. But to have them interact is where you're just like, okay, come on. Because you stop the movie for it.
That's what this movie does constantly. It keeps stopping to highlight these ancillary things that people remember from not just the original trilogy, Star Wars in general. Because even the inclusion of Saw Gerrera, that's a cut for the people who like Clone Wars and Rebels. You know, Blue Milk, Lucasfilm logo with no title card, AT-AT walkers. Like, Star Wars didn't have to say they were cool. That's like the mission statement of this movie. We're going to make Star Wars cool, and we're going to make adults feel like adults for watching Star Wars, even though it's really something for kids.
Let me play devil's advocate here. I mean, Gareth Edwards grew up a huge fan of the series. Obviously, everybody who's done this series has. I'm going to say, if we were to give Adam $200 million to make a Star Wars film, I guarantee that movie would be wall-to-wall, red fucking royal guards everywhere in that movie.
Stay tuned for next week.
We're on Hoth? Let's put a royal guard there. We're on Dagobah? Put some royal guards there. I am under the assumption of the fact that Gareth Edwards grew up a huge, for some reason, he had these two figures and he found a way to put it in this movie. So I'm not going to say that I wouldn't do that if I were him. But at the same time, like you said, Matt, it completely shrinks the universe, and I don't like that. We learn that rebellions are built on hope as they run into Chirrut, a blind warrior. Now, this is Donnie Yen. It was his idea to make this character blind. How do we feel about this character?
Really out of place in your gritty war movie to have the blind samurai. And again, they just have to, they can't leave the Force the fuck alone in the closet, locked away. In a movie with no Jedi, we still have to have a character who believes in the Force.
He believes in it. He doesn't use it, but he believes in it.
Yes, he does.
Well, he uses it, but what I'm saying is he's not like a Jedi, though.
It's like the K2SO thing where it's like, we have to have comic relief. Well, we have to have somebody with the Force. And his character arc would have actually worked if he was destitute. If he was like what we'll see next week with Luke, where he's cut himself off from the Force and his arc is the Empire taking over took away his connection from the Force. And he regains it by joining this group. But nope, he's exactly the way he is at the start of this movie as he is at the conclusion. And Donnie Yen is only here so they could show this movie in China.
Yep, that's the pandering part. That's what I read.
By the way, Donnie Yen plays this exact same character much better in John Wick 4.
Buddy, Donnie Yen is here because they couldn't get Jet Li.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Actually, they went to them both. They said they wanted Yen. They were prepared to go to Li. Li wanted double the amount, so they were happy when Donnie Yen said yes. Agreed, and this is, Garrett, to your point, this is, and I've had this issue, again, going back to Civil War. I hate that every single movie from Disney has to have a stop and include representation for the Chinese movie censors, because that is a thing. You can hate me for spelling it out, but it's a requirement that they add to films. That said, I love Donnie Yen in this movie. Chirrut and his partner that we're going to get to in a second are some of my favorite things in this movie and period. I have fun with them. I love the Blind Swordsman. To me, it goes back to those samurai films, so I am a huge fan of Chirrut.
You're right. That, and remember, Star Wars Force Awakens did not do well in China.
Yeah.
When they stop to say, hey, we're in Hong... You know what? That's where the names for places start. Because it's like, hey, we're in Hong Kong.
I'm sure Adams and Garrett, you could attest to this. Was his least favorite subject geography?
Yes.
Because I love history.
He loves history, but man, yeah, he was a he was not big on geography.
So, and with the introduction of Chirrut here, this is what I like, because this is the deep, deep cut, where if you know it, I could see some Star Wars purists being pissed. But the inclusion and reference to the Wills,
God.
I like that. That pops me. Yep. Because it's so deep. Like, it's not something that, to me, is as pandering. It's, to me, it's a reference acknowledgement and a little head notch to George Lucas's original title. So, you know, the story of the Wills. So, yeah, I absolutely love it, even though it goes nowhere with it.
Yeah, that's my problem, is that it goes nowhere. Andor says they need to hurry, as this town is ready to blow. They run into some troops, and of course, a firefight breaks out. I like seeing stormtroopers in the midst of combat again, but my God, I always hate when we cut away from the action so we can see a character rescue somebody.
Yeah, and
go back to Godzilla.
Spider-Man does this. This is the one thing that Jyn Erso does that makes you actually like her, and it feels purposefully calculated as an inclusion for you to like her. Because up to this point, she is a one-note, stuck-up bitch.
Cassie should have shot this kid to keep their secret.
Jesus.
Yeah, remember, this is Disney. But I also don't understand why he kills Saw's rebel guy. They get all pissed off about that, and that's why they get captured. So if he had a reason for actually killing him, it would have at least given something to his character.
Yeah, and I've seen this a number of times. But yeah, he's getting ready to throw a grenade, thermal detonator, not a thermal detonator, but a type of grenade at the troops. Well, they're all fighting them anyway. So yeah, I don't get it, other than we need to find a reason for Saw's guys to take in our band of heroes. Yeah, it's a weird inclusion. This fight, though, looks fantastic. It's shot really well. And when the chicken walker comes in, the AT-ST, that inclusion I'm okay with. Don't get me, we're going to talk about AT-AT later. But to me, it makes sense to have this chicken walker here in the street patrolling around.
This makes no sense to me.
Yeah, same.
Because these streets are so fucking narrow.
Yeah.
You know, because like, you think about the occupation of Mos Eisley and New Hope. You don't see any chicken walkers there. It's kind of the exact same geography. The one thing I do like about this movie is this is the most oppression I have felt on the part of the Empire in these movies. They're kicking down doors. They talk about raising the Imperial flag and what that oppression means. I really wish that was accentuated more throughout this entire movie. Them actually fighting imperialism.
Even that Star Destroyer just sitting on top of the city.
That's the dumbest thing in this movie, because if they could do that, why the fuck did you not do this on Hoth?
Well, they're learning, though. Hoth isn't for another set of years. See, Hoth takes place in the future.
Yeah, but they can do this now. They can literally park a Star Destroyer on a planet.
Has a shield generator.
Have a shield generator. This is so dumb. This is the prequel problem. I'm sorry. That's me nerding out, and I even asked Christian. He said, I got nothing.
Going back to this character rescue, this is such a lazy way of saying, yes, this person does have some heroics in them. So, as Adam said, we are seeing a two-legged walker make its way through the streets, as Jen all of a sudden is doing combat and shoots a robot who looks like K2SO.
Did you know that was not me?
Oh my god, you would laugh at that. Meanwhile, they are stopped by stormtroopers, and K2SO is having a hard time fast-talking their way out. But here's Chirrut to say that he's one with the Force, and the Force is with him.
Oh, that was so overplayed.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm like, that's not Luke, I am your father, I'm sorry. I'm like Peter Griffin, where it's like, who sings that song? James Taylor. Let's keep it that way.
Adam, do you like this, The Force is With Me?
I'm okay with it. It's overdone, but he's got a mantra, and he's a monk, so I'm okay with it. What I do like is this fight.
Yeah, this is why you get Donnie Yen. He specifically asked to choreograph his own fight scene. And he doesn't have another one for the rest of the movie.
That's the thing. He can do this. He can choreograph it. He can be his own stuntman. He can do this fight. And it feels like it. Oh, great.
Yeah. But it's such a contrast with the rest of the movie.
It is. Yeah. For so many things.
Are these two supposed to be gay?
You know what? That was a question when this movie was out. I remember when they are taken, spoiler alert, when they die later on in the film, they're holding each other. I think they're just partners and bros in battle. That's just what I read into it, but people have read a little more into it than that.
From the very beginning, I've taken that these two are a couple. Now, flip side, if I have a friend that I've known for several decades and we're trapped on a planet, would we talk shit like this and have this kind of back and forth? Absolutely.
Damn right.
And I love you, Garrett, but not that way. Watching it for this film, I still think these two were a couple. And I like that I believe that these two are a couple. It feels that way for me.
And let me backtrack. I'm not saying I find anything wrong with whether they are or not. I'm just saying what I brought into it was that they are just battle mates and they've been doing this for years.
I just hate this is the second time where they've really insinuated it but don't fully commit.
Well, what do you want them to do, Matt?
Just be out. Literally just be out.
Okay.
No pun intended. Because you had Finn and Poe. That was the same thing. And remember, they hyped up in Rise of Skywalker, oh, it's going to be the first lesbian kiss in a Star Wars movie, and it's like 2 seconds.
So Chirrut takes out a few troops as he's helped by Baze. Jen then reveals that she's the daughter of Galen Erso, and this is where I get the one laugh I had the entire movie, is when they put the hood on Chirrut, and he says, "You have to be kidding me, I'm blind." Great line. I laughed at that.
It's okay. 90% of the time that you read something where it says, hey, this wasn't scripted, it was ad-libbed, it's bullshit. Normally it's always scripted. This was actually ad-libbed.
Yeah.
It made me laugh out loud still.
Andor is imprisoned with Chirrut as Jen is brought to Saw. She tells...
And he says, I want to play a game.
It's Jigsaw.
Well, this is basically, like, they're treating him like he's Colonel Kurtz from Apocalypse Now.
I know!
He's gone crazy, but yet he knows Jen right off the... he recognizes her. But also, I'm confused. What is their history?
Yes.
When did she leave him? Why did she leave him? Because it makes it sound like he put her back in a hole and never saw her again.
That was my question earlier, is what is the history between these two?
Yep. They have a line, but it's cut out other stuff and include it. Yes, he left her somewhere at 16 with a blaster because she could take care of herself. That's writing yourself out of a hole that you created, and you don't do it well.
Jen tells Saw that he left her behind, and he says that he knew that she would make her way out. What a lazy fucking way of writing out of this. He then says that he senses a trap, and she says that all the rebellion has brought her is pain.
When he said the direct quote, it's a trap, I facepalmed.
He says he senses a trap. He didn't say it is a trap.
I have my own form of Force amnesia. I swear to God he said that. But also, like, this is where the big... giant fucking exposition dump is in this scene.
Yeah. How bored are you at this point, Matt?
Oh my god, I'm checking my watch. And we're 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, okay, what is the first act plot point? I don't know.
We cut to the unfinished Death Star as Tarkin says that the Emperor is awaiting his report. So they decide to test out the power of the Death Star on Jeddah. Andor makes contact with Bodhi, who reveals himself as the pilot. And then we didn't see the message from Galen, who explains himself as laying the groundwork for his revenge, which consists of placing a weakness on the Death Star.
Before we get to that, can I talk about how he wastes so much time, because I assume he had a limited amount of time to record this, to talk about how much he loves his daughter, who clearly, I don't know where does their relationship stand, because she acts like he doesn't exist. And how does he know that she's going to fucking see this?
Mm-hmm. And what a retcon, Adam, if you think about it, because me and you used to talk about this when we'd watch the original Star Wars way back when. Who put this freaking weakness in the Death Star while building it? Well, here's the retcon. This is when we learned that it was actually him who said F you to Krennic as he was building it. What do you think about that retcon, Adam?
Okay, for those that don't remember, not too long ago, we had a discussion where we reviewed Batman 89. And everybody kind of put down knowing that I was about to go off about the Joker in the alley.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I feel about Galen Erso deliberately placing a flaw in the Death Star. This was part of the things that I saw with, like, one of the final 40 trailers they put out, because they kept cutting them, probably as they were cutting this movie differently once a day, that I was like, oh, god damn it, they're going to make the flaw purposeful. Not only does this completely just slap in the face the pilots in A New Hope and what that movie does by making the sacrifice is just irrelevant, but the finding of the flaw and how you're going to take care of it, it undermines it all. It's not even necessary. You can do so much of this without having to have Galen Erso purposely do this. This exposition is sloppy. It's fucking boring for the what feels like half an hour that I got to sit here and look at a fucking hologram. This is the equivalent of when you have somebody, Bane, reading from a script where he's just like looking at a book and reading it. That's how I feel in the scene. And then it's anger-inducing that I was validated that they were going to make the flaw in the Death Star purposeful. Because to me, that just is it just kicks the rebels while they're down. It's inexcusable. Because you're trying to make a hero out of a villain for no other reason. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. For those that don't know, I don't like this decision.
Yeah, I just think it's stupid to make a whole movie, 2+ hour movie, to explain such a minuscule detail, and then to compound it by making it purposeful to create some kind of sympathy for an Imperial officer who, quote-unquote, grew a conscience. I think it's just stupid, and it also kind of retracts from the significance of the rebels pulling that off in A New Hope. Because if it was that fucking easy to shoot the proton torpedoes into the exhaust port, why did Luke need his connection to the Force? Oh, God, I hate this so much.
Yeah, and Adam, you took my exact thought on this, was that it just completely undermines the next movie, what they tell us is the next movie. Oh, yeah, this was the flaw that was strategically planted on, and I don't agree with this at all. I'm with you, too. Cheret gets his staff as they free the pilot, and Andor grabs Jen. They escape as Bonesaw goes down with the planet.
Why, is my question. He could very easily go with them, because he's the only other person who could justify Jen when she has to convince the Rebel Council that this is a thing. His death is such a contrivance to pit everyone against her. And he's like, I'm done running. I'm like, okay, why? And also, it's one thing if he gets like crippled and he goes, leave me behind. It's more important for you to survive. But he could just as easily leave with them.
Have a rock fall on him so he can't move.
Yeah, have his leg get shattered or something and they can't physically carry him. But
or have him get penetrated by Borg Gullet, since you know that's what's going on. And he won't leave the hentai monster behind.
Mm-hmm.
Just something.
Yeah.
But then this is another problem, though. What happens here? I don't need to see the Death Star fire, but not really.
Yeah, it's like a practice shot.
Hey, guess what? I know what this weapon does later. I've seen the sequel.
Exactly.
I don't need to see it at a fraction of its power.
I'll say this, though. I'll agree with Krennic in that this is a beautiful shot. I do love the destruction here. I like the way it looks, and that goes back to the look of the movie. It looks beautiful.
I love the shot from space. I hate this escape from the planet. This is the slowest, most boring explosion that you're escaping.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks beautiful from space. And this is when I do like Ben Mendelsohn, because most of the time he's in my notes as Ben Mendelsohn. But I do like the moment where the explosion happens, and from space he's like, it's beautiful. Like, you just get that creepy feel. And that I could have used more of.
Video game Tarkin then congratulates Krennic, but that he will now be taking over the Death Star from this moment on. Jen says that they can now beat the people who did this because of the weakness her father has rigged inside the Death Star. We cut to Edu, another fucking planet, this one an Imperial refinery planet, as they end up crash landing. No one believes the message that Jen has relayed as Andor heads off the ship. Meanwhile, we see some X-Wing fighters take off. Andor then spots Galen talking to the troops and sends Bodhi away. Now, this, we kind of alluded to this earlier. I think this whole scene in the rain, should he take the shot? Should he not take the shot? I think this is very clunky.
Oh, yeah, especially because we've seen him openly murder people.
Mm-hmm.
There's been nothing established in his character to make him change his mind. He doesn't have that strong connection to Jyn. He still values the cause over anything else. Why does he hesitate so much? And he gets out of it because of the convoluted bullshit of, oh, now the rebels know where they're there, so they're going to inadvertently bomb the place anyway, so he gets off scot-free. This is such, I'm going to say right now, even above the prequels, this is the worst written Star Wars movie up to this point. I know that's going to be unpopular, but God, is this thing clunky.
Just for that, I can't stand the way this planet is shot. I've been extremely complimentary about the look of this film. This entire sequence feels like it was shot on a freaking 1970s blue screen in somebody's garage. This is, I mean, Zack Snyder would be proud. This, it looks ugly. It looks like it's shot through fucking just sour blue milk. And I know it's supposed to be at night on a planet in the rain, but it's got to be visible. It's got to be able to be seen. It doesn't look good. The one good shot is when the X-Wings are coming in and you get the interior shots and the exterior shots. Those are beautiful. The rest of this looks like mud. When you're trying to follow who's going where for what reasons, your mind starts to hurt. I could use Borg Kulit at that point to explain to me what the hell's going on.
Yeah, try doing the plot summary to this. I had to rewind a number of times to get all this sequence right.
And I don't know why he's here.
Yeah.
If this is a refinery, why is he not on the Death Star?
Exactly.
Like, during the final construction, there's no reason for him to be on Edu.
Yeah, and for one who's been seemingly held hostage by the Empire for the last 15 years, he's sure got a lot of freedom.
Yes.
He's doing well.
Krennic tells Galen that the space station is complete and that he must be really proud. Krennic then says that there is a traitor amongst them and he requests the traitor step forward. When no one responds, Krennic says that it must have been a group effort and threatens to kill them all until Galen steps forward and says it was him all along.
Was me, Austin.
I love that reference. This doesn't stop Krennic, though, as he opens fire on all of them. Andor requests a delay in squadron support because Jen is on the platform, but they show up anyway and gunfire is unleashed.
We've seen Andor kill somebody at the beginning of this film, so we know he's not above it. We need to know that he has killed people that he has worked directly with in service of something, that we need to wonder whether or not he's willing to let Jen die right here.
Oh, yeah. To use this terrible joke, I rebel against this entire sequence.
Charrett somehow takes out a TIE fighter as Jen spots her dead father and says goodbye.
Oh my God, this is so...
Papa, okay. Can you hear me? Papa, can you
hear... Jeez.
This has all the sentimentality of a Hallmark movie.
Yeah.
It does not fit it within the context of this type of movie. And again, their relationship is so swept under the rug. Why should I care?
Jen tells Andor that she knows that he was here to kill her father, and he responds that he didn't pull the trigger. And we've asked it all podcasts, but why? All right, let's get to this now. We see some schlub make his way to where a mysterious white liquid is and says, "My lord, Captain Krennic has arrived." Interesting note about Darth Vader here. When Rogue One was announced, Disney was adamant that despite him being the first figure we see when A New Hope starts, and him being a huge part of the Death Star's construction, Darth Vader will not be a part of this movie. Flash forward to the trailers, and wouldn't you know it, here's Darth Vader front and center. Now, we'll talk about his presence and actions as we progress with the plot, but if this isn't Disney placating and trying so hard to please, I don't know what is.
Oh, that's what I said to open this podcast. I fully believe he was not intended to be in this movie, but in the big reshoot I mean, Rogue One refers to the second unit team that Ghost directed a big part of this movie. It's, why does Darth Vader want to be on a planet surrounded by the thing that is the reason why he's in that suit to begin with and living in constant pain? That seems incredibly stupid. And B, Vader's inclusion is the ultimate example of they did not feel confident enough in this movie to stand on its own. So we have to bring in the most popular character in Star Wars to placate and get people in the door. Because if they find out Darth Vader's here, you're going to bring in people who maybe were not dying to see this. So, yeah, I'm not a fan of Vader's inclusion.
Well, it worked. It made over $1 billion.
Yeah, I'm sure this is the thing that put them over the hump. I'm not being facetious when I say that. I seriously think this, people are like, oh, it's Darth Vader, you know, and he's got a lightsaber, so let's go see it, because he might do cool shit.
The establishing shot to the planet, I was like, ooh, that looks kind of cool, and I know where we are, because I've read about Vader's castle.
Yes.
So I'm like, ooh, that's kind of cool, you know, from a look standpoint. So from a 30,000 foot level, I'm like, man, that looks pretty cool. And that's kind of where that ended, because everything that happens when we get inside it, I don't need it. I don't like it. I don't want it. And it ended up with me in a theater with my kid sitting next to me, with me going, oh, Jesus fucking Christ. Dad. Nope, that's the right response, kid.
And they had the red lenses here. You know, they're trying so hard to replicate that look that he had in A New Hope. We don't have the slicked up helmet that he had in parts 5 and 6.
There's no chain.
No chain. How do you miss that?
Here's the problem. Here's what takes me out. David Prowse is not in that suit.
Yeah.
I immediately realize part of the power of Vader is he's just this fucking behemoth that towers over everybody. And yeah, he's got some platform boots on, I'm sure, but he's not this big, imposing figure, especially next to Ben Mendelsohn. So, like, I immediately recognize as he's walking out, this skinny-ass guy in the suit.
So, Krennic stands as Vader arrives, complete with the Imperial March playing in the background. After he chastises him for not making the Death Star a massive weapon, Vader then force-chokes him down, and a couple things happen here. One, the way he's holding out his hand like he's holding a guitar in the next shot is fucking ridiculous. And two, Vader tells him to not choke on his aspirations. I'm sorry, since when did Darth Vader do Mr. Freeze-type puns?
You got my oh fuck's sake moment in the theater. Is Vader working on his type 5? And he just got out of the back to tank. He's like, this is, Vader doesn't do quips. He's never done quips. This is stupid shit. Whatever second unit decided to come in and do this, I can't believe that they got away with this line at the end.
It's so fucking stupid. This is not Darth Vader at all. Why wasn't this cut in fucking post? Why? Oh, I'll get to that. Well, next.
Yeah, well, there's that. But also, the modulation on the voice isn't right either. And part of that is just because Joe Jones is in his 80s now at this point. It just doesn't sound right. And yeah, that line, I'm like, okay, I'm going back in my head. Does Darth Vader ever give any kind of a pun or a word of a turn of phrase in the original trilogy? I couldn't think of it.
Spoiler alert, like, he doesn't.
The one I thought of is when he chokes out the guy in Empire and he's like, apology accepted. But that's like not... It's not a pun.
No.
You know, it's not a joke.
That's scary.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's evil as fuck is what that is. And I'm sorry, as if I wasn't before, these two things combined with something he does later just makes me completely turn on this fucking movie. And I don't go back.
I thought for sure, I'm like, okay, we got Vader and Tarkin. Surely Palpatine's going to show up at some point.
No, he's just...
And that was the one thing that I was surprised we didn't see.
No, because A New Hope, he's just kind of a presence, you know, that we don't see him until Return of the Jedi, so I was not expecting to see him at all, actually.
I was just surprised because Tarkin openly says, like, you know, the Emperor, and they mentioned, like, I'm surprised Emperor and Darth Vader aren't here to see this, but yet Darth Vader shows up in the movie multiple times.
Yeah.
How?
And what does he do all day? He just sleeps in the back of the tank?
My biggest other issue with this right here is, and we talked about how this kind of countermans A New Hope, Vader makes it very clear that he doesn't give a shit about the Death Star. He tells Tarkin, this mechanical monstrosity that you've created pales in comparison to the Force. He doesn't care about the Death Star. So Krennic coming to whine to him like a little bitch about the Death Star also makes no sense whatsoever. Kyber crystals, Jedha, things like that. You know what we should have seen is a fallen fucking statue of Anakin. You could add some emotion there, because Vader could have cared about Jedha being destroyed. He doesn't give a shit about the Death Star.
Yeah, and Vader summoned him, which makes it even dumber.
And then made him wait to get dressed.
He's like, the Emperor will see, he's like, Lord Vader will see you now, but he should have just walked out in a bathrobe and his outfit's like half on, where he's got just the faceplate of his mask, but the helmet part's not on.
Meanwhile, we're in the midst of a council meeting where Jen talks them into stealing the plans and data with a pump-me-up speech, ending with what she was told earlier, the rebellion is built on hope.
Why does she believe in the cause now all of a sudden?
Yeah, turns on a dime.
Yeah, turns on a dime, and I do like how they're all like, yeah, we're outmatched, so screw you. And they have the logical answer. Did you see that? Where are the plans? But they have to contrive a way for them to have it destroyed when the planet gets blown to shit.
I remember my girlfriend at the time, who was a pretty big Star Wars fan. When we went to this movie, she looked at me, she goes, are those Bothans? I said, no, those. that's a different story that we might get in a few years, but no. It's not
the Jedi.
Yeah, exactly. That's from Return of the Jedi. And
yeah, that's when they got the plans for the second Death Star.
Exactly. I had to explain that to her. Andor shows up and says that he believes her, which is why he's sticking around and helping with the mission.
Boy, he, like, I swear to God, Vince Russo wrote this movie. These turns happen off screen.
I know.
And they're the most artificial character dynamics I have ever seen in a Star Wars movie.
And you have my axe.
Imagine if Jen left with everybody and Andor gets sent after her.
Yeah.
You could have
take her out.
Yeah. You want to talk about drama.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they don't have the balls to do that.
No, this movie's not preoccupied with that. This movie is a drama facade. Everything is smoke and mirrors with making you think you care. But when you take a step back, unless you're a fan, I can't bring myself to get invested in this at all. Because A, I know how it's going to end. And B, I don't give a shit about these characters. It's the same problem that the prequels have.
And if you think about it, it is the easiest thing to do, is to make you care about these characters, because we know they're going to die at the end. So
yeah, there's no other option.
Yes. So there is a way to endear them to us, but I think they were kind of felt trapped by the war portion of this film. You guys said it earlier, we're going to get into Star Wars, right? Well, in those war movies, we don't care about any characters. So they were so stuck between a rock and a hard place that they didn't know what the fuck to do. KS2O says that he's helping too. Bodhi comes up with the call name Rogue One. Because we got to get that in here.
Then, are you going to talk about the other thing before they leave?
Go ahead.
No, I'm going to ask, are you going to bring them up?
What other thing? Say it.
The other droids.
No, I don't have those here.
When I saw C-3PO and R2-D2, I threw up my hands and said, fuck this. It's so off-putting. It's like they were in the background, you don't see them, and then all of a sudden they have to have dialogue. It's like, hey, remember these two? Because they're here. We have to include them.
Background and no dialogue, you can get away with that. Kind of.
But stop the movie, you have a hard cut to them watching them leave.
Yep.
Oh my God, I hate this so much.
You know how you do an Easter egg? You do it about 5 seconds before this happens when you're going through the hangar, which, nice to see Yavin. I think it looks beautiful. Really nice recreation of it. But you have an overhead General Syndulla to your fighter, General Syndulla. Beautiful Rebels call with nobody understanding if they don't do it, and the movie doesn't stop to let you know that Hera's here.
And, dear Gareth Edwards, there's a reason people hide Easter eggs, and also the line Jimmy Smith has about, oh, my Jedi friend.
I
know somebody.
Yeah. Is that Obi-Wan? Is that Ahsoka?
You
know your Star Wars?
I have to say, and I know I'm going to get hate for this, I did not mind the inclusion of R2 and 3PO. That was one Easter egg I didn't have a problem with. The infiltration's on as soldiers roam on foot, and Jen and Andor, they make their way incognito. Chirrut takes out a few soldiers as charges are put on the ships.
This is also like they're starting to run out of creative ways, so they sort of do the Force Awakens thing in reverse where they're pulling from Jedi with the, do they have a code clearance?
Yeah.
To get through on the little shuttle. Like, this is as much rinse and repeat as a lot of the stuff in The Force Awakens is for A New Hope.
The charges go off as Krennic deploys another garrison. Video game Tarkin, he gets an update and says, be sure to inform Lord Vader.
This Scarif planet, and this, it's weird, this last 30 minutes kind of like, it feels like a different movie, but Scarif is gorgeous.
I agree. Somehow, boys, they are snuck up on by an AT-AT.
It is not an AT-AT. They rename it so they can sell another fucking toy. because Hasbro might as well have made this movie.
How did they not hear this thing? Like, yeah. It's got the T-Rex. It's the Jurassic Park T-Rex.
That's my exact note, boys. They have no idea how big and lumbering these things are. My God, in Empire, they might as well have been dinosaurs. Here, no one can hear these things coming.
In Empire, it shook the base.
Yes.
From walking.
From walking, like, hundreds of yards away.
This thing emerges from the tree like a frickin' raptor, but suddenly stands taller than the tree it just emerged out of.
I hate this so much.
This is what happens. This movie is basically you throw all your toys into the sandbox and you're so desperate to play with every single one that you throw logic out the window in your storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? My last big movie, I had to hide everything. I'm going to reveal everything in this film.
The difference is that actually worked, in my estimation.
Yeah, I'm with that. I'm with Matt on that. God, we got to have that podcast.
So when you actually see it, it actually has impact. Uh-huh. When Godzilla stopped, I felt like I got my money's worth because I felt like I was being teased and it paid off. Here, I'm teased from the moment this movie starts with the promise of a better movie, and I don't fucking get it.
And here's the funny thing. This was a huge problem I had with that trailer when I went on the main podcast at the other place we were at, and they weren't hearing any of it. They were just like, we're getting a war movie in a Star Wars universe. Just like it. I'm like, I can't.
Not really, though, because it's a skirmish. You know, it's got the same problem Battle for the Planet of the Apes has, where it's really minuscule in the grand context of things. And also, when you don't have characters worth investing in, it doesn't matter how good your action sequences are.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and give a compliment because we've been railing against this a lot. And I don't know how the response I'm going to get from you guys is going to be. I did like them using old recordings of the New Hope actors in the space battle. I liked the fact that we see that Rogue Five is taken out to make room for Luke in the next movie. This stuff I didn't have a problem with. I kind of liked seeing these X-Wings in battle, and I liked seeing these actors that we see in A New Hope years later doing their lines that were alternate takes that Edwards just kind of edited in here. I thought this was kind of a cool way to use this battle.
I agree with you. I think it's actually pretty fantastic. Seeing Gold Squadron, seeing Blue Squadron, the shots were inserted, you know, back from 1970s filming into this one, I thought pretty damn seamlessly. And I think that makes a nice connection. That's a nice way to do it because you also gave takes that were completely cut.
Yes.
So you didn't reuse something that was there. It's new to us, but it's not new. So I think that was nicely done. I also think that this space battle is phenomenal. And I think the transitions in the land battle, where you kind of follow an X-Wing coming in, it transitions to the land battle, you follow them, you follow a rocket up to something else. It's very Avengers, where, you know, you follow an arrow to somebody chasing this, to chasing this, to chasing this, but it lets you know where you are. I got issues with people showing up out of nowhere, AT-AT. But I think the battle scene in this final quarter of the movie is astounding. When I play Battlefront 2, on my PlayStation, and I absolutely love that game. I got a ridiculous amount of time into it. It puts me in the mood to sit, to go back and watch this, the final end of the movie from Scarifon.
The inclusion and the archival footage that they reinsert, I thought was actually pretty organic. In a movie that calls attention to almost everything else they're pulling from, this was the one time where they actually showed restraint, and it frustrates me even more because it showed they were capable of doing it.
K2SO tells Andor and Jen that the Rebel fleet is being attacked, and they need to blow a hole in the shield gate so they can transmit the plans. Those stealthy AT-ATs, they continue to attack as the fleet shows up to save the day.
That shot, it's almost laughable because, you know, they fire, Baze fires a rocket, hits it in the face, but then it looks back like a dog where it hears a weird sound. Like, that head whips back. That's not how something that size would go. But I do think that's a nice oh shit moment to show the X-Wings arrive on planet. Mm-hmm. That's just to blow the shit out of the thing from the side. Really, really cool.
I will say this. I think Edwards is putting these two battles together much better than Abrams did in the finale last week. I think this is edited better.
I do. I just don't know where Edwards is here and where second unit is and third unit and fourth unit. You know, this thing is chopped up so much, it might as well be Cuisinart the movie. So I don't know who's what, but I do like this battle a lot. It feels like war here. A Disney-fied war, but I do feel like we're getting some really good battle scenes here. We're getting some deaths. We're getting some... I'm digging it.
So I do like how he's using the same type of ground-up perspective that he employed very well in Godzilla, in my humble opinion. But when people start getting killed, I'm like, okay, I knew this was coming, and that I've been given no reason to invest in them. So I feel like I'm just watching white noise. The last 30 minutes of this movie. It kind of, honestly, it kind of reminds me of the end of Attack of the Clones. Except there's not that barrier of I'm watching a CGI army versus a CGI army. A lot of this is practical, but I still have that lack of investment.
You know what's funny? When they were putting this thing together, Edwards knew for sure that he was not going to be allowed to kill all these characters at the end of this movie. But Disney, to his surprise, said, yeah, we'll go with that. And so he is killing these characters, but to your point, Matt, I don't feel anything when they die.
I didn't think that they were all going to die.
You thought that Jen and Andor were going to get out?
I know that we know we don't see them later, but Disney doesn't seem preoccupied with that so much. But there's a trailer where you see where Jen is out on the catwalk and you see a TIE fighter rise up behind her. So as far as I am assuming, there's at least two or three of this group that are going to get away.
By the way, that shot is not in the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of shots in the trailers, not in the movie. Well, that's the thing about rebellions. We rebel, not in the movie. There's merchandise made from lines Jen says. Not in this movie.
Yeah. Matt, did you think all of them were going to die, or did you think they had hope?
Oh, there was no hope. Everyone might as well have had buzzards flying around them when this movie starts.
Andor is stuck with a puzzle of trying to open the doors as KS2O takes out some troops. They start going through codes until Jen comes upon Stardust, which we, of course, saw Galen use earlier when addressing his daughter. So this is the code that breaks it is Stardust.
This is the Martha moment of this movie. I hate this so much.
We saw Batgirl do this in Batman and Robin too. It's the same shit.
Oh my god, you're right.
So K2SO, he's taken out, but as he dies, he says that they can still broadcast the plans if they go on the tower to do so. Man, we are just elongating this.
This should have been the actual mission, to infiltrate and do sort of an actual heist. You think of stealing the Death Star planes, you think of something like the Italian Job. Or like even like Fast Five, where they have to actually put a plan in place. A lot of this, they're flying by the seam of their pants. It's just, this is not the worst example of Star Wars, but this is really kind of a fetch quest type of movie. Where it's a bunch of scenes put together, but the through line is not really that engaging.
It's video game logic, where, yeah, to your point, Italian Job, the original, not the remake. Something like that. Do a gritty Ocean's 11. I mean, just something where you're, yeah, you could have made the entire thing here on Scarif. And had a stronger movie for it.
Yeah, and give all of your characters a specific purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're only here out of economic necessity. It's just, well, this is who we met along the way. Do a lot of them have specific skill sets? No. But we also don't know what stealing the Death Star plans entail until this part where they have to play Tetris to get the plan.
Bodhi makes his way across and plugs in as the space battle continues. Jin and Andor, they discard their disguises and they head towards the tower. Chirrut makes his way onto the battlefield and says that he's one with the Force and the Force is with him as he turns on the access to the tower and Cassian is shot. Chirrut is blown up and he gets an Ewok-style death scene here where we're seeing Baz just kind of mourn him as he's dying.
All this right here, like, I am captivated by the different stuff going on because we start killing them in rapid fashion. And I start caring about the death with K2SO. I've wished for most of the droids to get their memory wiped and get pushed in the garbage compactor. But I'm actually sad when K2 dies and sacrifices himself. And I have not given two shits about Bodhi in this movie. I think everything with that character has been horrible. But I think the death has done well, that he gets in, he's there, he's has his heroic moments just in time for one of these troopers to throw a freaking grenade in with him. Like, it's just, oof. I mean, we're getting some wartime deaths here, and I'm going with this quite a bit.
I wish I cared. That's my summarization of this entire movie. I wish it gave me a reason to care. You know, this could have gone the way, you know, like, because you think of movies like The Seven Samurai or Magnificent Seven, you know, these Men on a Mission type movies where the bulk of the movie is getting to know those characters. And again, it just shows the importance of you need to prioritize character over spectacle and action for this type of story to work. And I feel like it fails at that for its entirety.
You know what my favorite character is? And we haven't even mentioned him once throughout the course of this podcast. Admiral Akbar's predecessor, Admiral Radish here.
Radish!
I love this guy! And I love this decision he makes. So they're able to disable the Star Destroyer's engines as Admiral Radish calls up a Hammerhead Corvette. What a reference that is, huh, Adam?
I love it.
I do too.
This is such a badass moment. And this is the type of... I know I keep referencing it, and I'm sorry people that are tired of it, but I'm literally, because of work, I am reading all of Rogue Squadron and Wraith Squadron. So I think I'm on book like 8 right now. So while we're doing these, I'm reading Star Wars wartime books. And the Raddus being in this, and then this move, and it, again, it is shot wonderfully. It looks like they're using models, you know, so I like the practicality look of it, even if it's not. But that they've taken out the Star Destroyer's engines. Great job, fighters. One, I'm glad we get Y-Wings in this film. Listen to last week. But that because it's out of power, they bring in this Hammerhead Corvette, and they're just going to literally force it into the Star Destroyer next to it. The way that it chops off, like, the bridge of that other Star Destroyer is such an amazing shot. And then watching it descend into the shield generator is fucking awesome.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I thought this was my favorite part of the end battle here.
I'm just confused by the logistics of how a ship that small can take out two Star Destroyers. I'm like, wow, those are some really powerful thrusters, apparently.
I did like seeing the two Star Destroyers collide, though. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, because you get a moment in, was it Empire, when the Falcon's escaping, and they kind of, two Star Destroyers, like, sideswipe each other.
Yeah.
And they're, like, falling over the set to act like they crashed into each other.
Mm-hmm.
But this one actually just takes one another off by the way that, you know, because it's floating dead in space. The engines are gone. So think of it as ship and water. So to use the Hammerhead, God, this looks cool.
Jen makes her way onto the tower right before the door shuts. Again, we're doing the ladder thing, right? And as she gets up the ladder, of course, the door's going to shut right behind her.
Yeah, it turns into Die Hard.
Yeah, I thought of that too. Krennic approaches Jen as she reveals herself as the daughter of Galen, and she reveals that the weakness has been revealed. But right before he can take her out, she is saved by Andor.
Reshoot.
Yep.
There's no way he was not killed.
Exactly.
When Krennic shot him earlier. Because the look on her face is clear that he didn't land on a little ledge. Mm-hmm. He fell all the way down that shaft.
She transmits the plans, which are shown exactly as they appear in A New Hope. And I guess this is like a hard drive or something? Like, how are they? Why is it they have to go on this tower to transmit these things?
Through Google Cloud.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a long time ago. They didn't have Wi-Fi at that moment, you know, even though they're transmitting the plans.
So. Yes.
Yes, it's an external hard drive.
Video game.
And floppy disks, at least. I'm sure that would have worked. Because his message, remember, was on a USB drive.
Exactly. Video game Tarkin then says to target the base at Scarif. Jen and Andor, they look at each other kind of lovingly, I guess, as the Death Star once again fires. Andor and Jen.
They do not have it. Sorry. I got to say, I appreciate they don't have him kiss.
It looked like they wanted to, though.
Yeah, but it looks like, for a movie that has no restraint in member berries, that the easy thing to do, and God knows Disney in every other moment would have had them kiss on the beach and then die. So these two just look like, hey, you know what? We went through some shit together and we know this is the end. I don't need fucking Mendelsohn appreciating the Death Star one last time. I mean, yeah, you get your comeuppance, but that's a step too far. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate that these two just look like we went through some shit and we're dying on a beach.
You know what I found interesting about this shot, and I found very symbolic, is that Andor has his head down. He's not looking at the actual blast, but Jen is. She looks right at it as it comes at them. I thought that was interesting that they made that decision.
Thanks, Dad.
Yeah, exactly. Andor and Jen collapse on the beach as Andor tells her that her father would have been proud. And you know what? I gotta say, as much as I've reamed this movie, I'm one who also lives trying to live up to a dead father, and this line kind of made me tear up a little bit. I gotta say, I haven't seen it in a while, but this got to me. And then
it's a moment of emotion that, as long as you're not completely pulled out and waiting for the timer to count down like Matt is, I think you would get something out of it.
Exactly. Meanwhile, Vader is preparing a boarding party, and this should have been the end of the movie. Instead, we see the rebels retrieve the plans. And we get the scene everybody and their mother were talking about when this movie came out, which is Vader lighting up his lightsaber and taking out these rebels in a dark side rage. Yes, on the surface, this is very cool. But what have I been screaming about on this entire podcast, boys? Consistency. By doing this, they have negated the awesome first appearance Vader made in A New Hope. And what they're telling us is that he was actually not a lumbering guy in a suit choking rebels to try to get the plans and fight Obi-Wan on the Death Star by basically lumbering around. He is a badass here. And the very next scene, he barely lumbers around and chokes a rebel with his arms. God, I hate this scene.
I love this scene.
Oh, go fuck yourself. You can't be serious.
The way that this scene plays in this movie, though, is a different movie. That's my problem with it. So let me finish.
Okay.
Jesus. Arkin. Don't choke on your aspirations. But this also had, you know what this scene is right here? This scene is Dwayne Johnson coming out the weekend of release and saying, "Hey, everybody, I put Superman back in my film. Please come see my movie." Because this had, and you know what? It worked. Because the talk of this movie was this scene. And this is badass. This is Vader like we have never seen before. The problem with that is this is 5 minutes before A New Hope.
Yeah.
And if he could do this here on this ship, why when he boards the blockade runner does he not act this exact same way? This horror scene of Vader and watching that saber ignite, when you want to go to YouTube and watch this clip, put it on the biggest scene, it is badass. And not just Vader, but the emotion out of these rebels that are getting slaughtered is emotion that we haven't seen in this movie. There is fear, there is horror. I mean, Vader throws somebody to the ceiling and cuts him in half while he's holding. Pay attention to the little things he does. It's brutal. It's amazing. It just is so out of place that it doesn't fit in this movie, in the next one, or anything else. This is me playing with toys and doing a really good job at it. It's just too bad that this is the standout scene.
This should have been in Force Unleashed, the video game, not this movie. It doesn't belong here.
It's Sith Unleashed.
Yeah.
This just proves my point how much this movie sucks. That this is the scene everyone talks about. The one that was clearly not, from inception, meant to be in this movie. Like, I think you're kind of proving my point, everybody. And I agree with Garrett. This is the problem with everything they have done with Vader recently. This, where he is so overpowered. But you compare it to New Hope, where he has to lumber around and him and Alec Guinness have the mobility of a couch. This is what happens when you prioritize fandom over logic. And I'm like, yeah, this is very tense for those rebels in the hallway, but then you should have just made Alien, where they're being stalked by Darth Vader on that ship.
That would have been an awesome movie.
Yeah, but seriously, like, do, if you're going to do a Star Wars horror movie, have them trapped in Echo Base with the Wampas attacking them or something. There's better stuff you could do than this. This feels like fandom masturbation, a good word to describe this scene.
Completely is. Yep.
They should have had zombie stormtroopers, right, guys? But we're not done. We have one other scene to talk about. We see the small set of rebels get away and approach the other video game character in this movie, Princess Leia, as she receives a transmission and says that what they have sent is hope. As credits roll on Rogue One, oh my god, if I did not like Tarkin, I really don't like this.
The last 5 minutes of this movie are embarrassing.
Yeah.
I resent this completely, even removing myself from the obvious bad timing, because she passed like right around the time this movie was coming out.
Yeah.
So I also think it's unnecessary. Like, we know the minute you see that ship that this movie is a direct lead-in to A New Hope, but they have to put the period on this and leave no stone unturned. Not only does it look bad, it's dangling a shiny object in front of a cat. And God, I hate it.
Yep, I rebel against this one so much more than I do the Tarkin one. Open the door and show the princess from the back.
Yes.
I think that would have been an okay way to do it, especially being that she had passed away before this was released. So, now, when I watched this the first time, I was in a theater of people who cheered at that moment. And part of that was she did just die. Like, we all knew she had just died. So this was kept a secret. I didn't know that we were going to see her in this. And I think there was a lot of just sentimentality from people that even, you know, CG Carrie Fisher, that's what they were responding to. It comes across in poor taste so much more now in retrospect. And I did not need this at all. Just show her extend a hand to show somebody put the plans into her hand. That would have been enough.
All right. Wow, what a podcast this has been. Scale of 1 to 10, what do we give Rogue One, A Star Wars Story? Adam?
When I walked out of that theater the first time, I was a very unhappy fan. Everything that I had feared about this movie is exactly what it came to be. With Galen Erso and undermining the next film by making the Death Star law purposeful. Like, that is something, and I've had people argue with me about this pretty hardcore. I'm never going to get over that sticking point. And I don't think any Star Wars fan should. I'm not questioning fandoms. I don't know how that's not a problem. The rest of this film, though, it's made by committee. Every scene seems disconnected from the one before it. That's my biggest problem. I walked out of this movie really, really upset the first time I saw it. It was, when I saw Force Awakens as a family, we saw it, I want to say, twice opening weekend. I saw it two more times before it left theaters because I wanted to see it in a movie theater. This one I watched once. I didn't have a desire to see it again. I did watch it a second time in theaters. I bought the Blu-ray because I bought them all at that point, and it took me a long time to rewatch it. Battlefront 2, which is a pretty awesome Star Wars war game, makes me appreciate this film because I can watch just the parts of this film that I like. So when it's on that aspect, I can skip scenes. I can fast forward. I can rewind. Watching this as a movie, this thing is a cluster. It's a mess. This is what happens when you have a studio that gives you a date, when they don't have a script, when they don't have an idea of how it's going to be. Because you push this thing out a year or two, you rewrite it, you redo some shit, you could have a decent movie. As it stands, it's a mess. The acting is subpar across the board. There's no one that stands out as good. It's just middling levels of meh, other than maybe Donnie Yen, who doesn't have much to do. But other than Baze and Chirrut and K2SO, I don't need the rest of this rogue band of rebels. This is a 6 on 10, and I'm saying that because it is, of anything else, though, it is beautiful to look at. It is gorgeous. Make an art book of this movie and I'm going to put it on my shelf. But this is pretty to look at. It's got no substance whatsoever. And I think this tarnished so many of the movies that would come after it, because I think this is really when the backlash started. So 6 on 10 for looks.
Matt?
Gary, you might as well play the Imperial March as I give my final comments, because I'm going to be what you have been accused of as the negative Nancy when it comes to Disney Star Wars. This was everything I was afraid of when I heard that we were getting A, a new Star Wars movie every year, and B, spinoffs. Spinoff means you are completely ancillary to the existing continuity. What they made was something that is standalone in name only because it doesn't have the word episode and a number anywhere in the title. For people who hate the word prequels, it's exactly what they made. Yes, it looks pretty. Certainly. I've been very complimentary towards the technical aspects of this movie beyond the bringing back deceased actors instead of just outright recasting. But at the end of the day, this is an exercise in just possibilities of what they could do. And what they made instead of a spinoff is episode 3.999. And I feel like it was a bait and switch that is wasted potential. I can't bring myself to care about anyone in this movie. I am not invested in the member berries, the fan service, that is so constant, it's like I'm being browbeaten as things are happening. So if it sounds like I've been really hard on this movie, I just have to call it like I see it. I had a very visceral reaction the second time I watched this, and I'm going to be that guy. Up to this point, I think this is the worst Star Wars movie because it does not justify its own existence. There's no good substitute for character development. And the movie that was purposely made to expand upon a plot point does not justify its own existence. This is the first Star Wars movie up to this point, and maybe in the entire series, who knows, that I could say I actively hate. I'm giving this a 3 on 10.
Wow, 3 on 10. All right, so I've come to a realization, boys. I've come to a realization, Matt and Adam, we reviewed a war movie earlier this year in the Planet of the Apes series, and I've come to the realization that I'm not a big fan of war movies, even movies contained within one of my favorite cinematic universes. But a huge problem I have with this movie is what I've detailed throughout the course of it, is that everything is a bait and switch. Well, we're going to make a war movie. Well, actually, we're going to try to make this female be the one who actually goes through with the mission, and we're going to try to make you like her. We're going to have no Jedi. Well, we're going to have somebody who's kind of with the Force, but not really. We're not going to have Darth Vader. Well, actually, a little more than halfway in, you're going to see Darth Vader, and then you're going to see him in a fan service scene at the end. Everything is a goddamn bait and switch in this movie. The only balls I can say it has is that it kills off every character at the end, and before this movie had come out, I would not think a Star Wars movie would do that. This movie does have points that I've liked, that I've mentioned. I like the space battle at the end. I think the movie looks gorgeous, as Adam has given in detail. There are parts I do like, but I am not on the side of this movie at all. I can't go as bad as Matt. I can't say I actually hate this movie. I don't. But I don't like the fact that everything I was afraid of it being is what it turned out to be. You include these goddamn walkers? Really? I don't care if you include them, but find a way to include them that actually feels organic to this universe. Don't have them sneak up on people through fog. And then you include certain characters, like the people from Mos Eisley that... I don't know, just do it just to give a yay from the crowd. So, with everything this movie does right, which isn't much, there is way more that it does wrong. I'm going to be more generous than Matt. I want to go 4. I'll give it the patented 4 on 10. There's just so much about it that I really, really don't like. And it's a shame that they took that one paragraph and tried to expand it into this. And I think Adam hit it on the head. If you're going to do this, and I think they would do this now if they hadn't made this movie, you got to do a miniseries of it. You got to make this a 6-7 part series. So I will go 4 on 10 for Rogue One.
All right, you want to tell them?
Tell them what?
So there's a series on Disney Plus called Andor.
Well, I know that, but that's not about this movie, though.
No, but you know who created
Andor? I know who did it. It's Tony Gilroy. I get it.
Which makes me think that everything that Disney did not allow him to do with this one, or everything that they rewrote and took away, is what that series is. And a lot of people say that Andor is the best thing that Star Wars has done in decades. And I am one to agree. I think Andor is phenomenal. And if you want Star Wars without Skywalkers, without Jedi, that is what you should watch.
Boring as fuck. But for another day. All right. So we've done Rogue One. We've done The Force Awakens. You know, when Disney Star Wars was put on the schedule for this month as opposed to the end of the year. Actually, no, even when it was put on for the end of the year, which we were originally going to do, I think the podcast I have looked forward to the most is the one we're going to do next week. It is amongst the most debated, not only Star Wars film, but films of all time. Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. I will say this much in anticipation of that podcast. When I talked about The Force Awakens, and, you know, I talk about J.J. Abrams films. J.J. Abrams films do not age very well when you watch them repeatedly. They kind of go down in quality the more you watch them. When I came out of The Last Jedi, I was about as rigorous as I was on this particular podcast about this movie. But as the years have gone on and upon rewatches, anybody who pays attention to my letterbox knows that the star ratings have gradually gone up. And I am curious, when I watch this movie this week, how I'm going to feel if it goes up even higher next week. Matt, what are you anticipating when we talk The Last Jedi?
I don't know, because this movie exhausted me with the discourse about it. Not because of where I stand, but just the level. When I saw this movie and I walked out, I had my thoughts. I had no idea the back and forth that was happening with the controversy of The Last Jedi. I had no idea. Maybe that's because I'm not a Star Wars guy as far as in the weeds. And I kind of wish I stayed off the internet, because I went into that movie knowing nothing and I did not care. Even with Rian Johnson directing, that was the one thing that excited me when this whole slate was announced, because it was J.J. Abrams doing Episode 7, Rian Johnson doing Episode 8, Colin Trevorrow doing Episode 9. His was the only directing person that excited me of the three, by far. But those trailers, I could not give a fuck about this movie. And I have to say, when I walked out of that movie, I have my thoughts, but like I said, I had no idea what I was walking into. And 7 years later, I think it's still the most contested Star Wars movie by far. Maybe Episode 9 is up there too. But I had no idea what I was walking into. So I'm excited to talk about it with you guys. But I know no matter what I say, no matter what we say, there's going to be that other side that just says we're wrong.
God, you're not kidding. Adam, the two of us have had a lot of discussions about this movie. I am very curious to know, from your point of view, what are you anticipating when we add another one to these discussions and we talk The Last Jedi next week?
I think the last 5 minutes of this film, and by that I mean Vader... Vader walking through that blockade runner is what next week's discussion is going to be like. You know what? I don't know how I'm going to feel. I remember being excited about Rian Johnson directing that film because I'm a big fan of Looper. And I thought we were going to get answers. And as much as I was ho-hum on The Force Awakens, I thought it laid some track that I was excited to see where it went. And I walked out of Rogue One the first time not liking the movie at all. And it's grown on me, and I can admire parts of it and ignore the others. I don't know if on a Skywalker saga film you could ignore parts, and so I'm really interested to go back and watch it. I know how I felt initially. This was the first Star Wars movie I think I saw in 3D. I remember that 3D IMAX, whole family in there together, and we were there opening weekend ready to go. So I'm very excited to discuss it, watch it again, and evaluate my thoughts then and now. And like Matt said, I don't know if there's any movie in the saga that's been as discussed as fervently as The Last Jedi. So whatever your take on it is, Rian Johnson did his job in that respect.
As much as we built this series up, we've been pretty agreeable on the first two podcasts here. For some reason, I don't see that happening next week. I'm kind of with Adam on that. So that'll be a discussion for next week. The week after that, we have Solo. The week after that, we have The Rise of Skywalker. We are concluding the Star Wars saga, and until we get those new ones, which we'll talk about when we get to episode 9. But boys, it's been yet another long discussion about Star Wars. I wouldn't expect anything less. I appreciate you guys going on this journey through these galaxies with me. And until next week, when we get to Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi, I'm one with the podcast, and the podcast is with me.
One of Saw's rebels, but he's just gone missing. His sister will be looking for him. The temple's been destroyed, but she'll be there waiting. I'll give her your name and hope that gets us a meeting with Saw.
Hope?
Yeah, rebellions are built on hope.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
I haven't completed my calculations.
Check out the Percolated Media archives as we have tons of franchise reviews, including The Incredibles movies, The Planet of the Apes franchise, The Mad Max movies, Avatar, Pirates of the Caribbean, Indiana Jones, movies featuring the team-up of Leonardo DiCaprio and Martin Scorsese, the film adaptations of author Stephen King, Jurassic Park, and so many more.
Be careful not to choke on your aspirations.
And if you would be so kind, please take a moment and give us a positive review and rating on your podcast platform of choice.
Very well, I'll consider it a group effort then.
It truly helps others find and discover our podcasts.
We have no choice now but to try and mend that broken trust.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett, Matt, Adam, and Nathan.
You, stay here. We need to check your diagnostics.
Diagnostics? I'm capable of running my own diagnostics, thank you very much.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
I believe I owe you an apology.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
Stand here amidst my achievement, not yours!
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men and a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
Is that him? He looks kind of different than I imagined.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes, and all clips, music, and audio cues are used as such.
What part of urgent message do you guys not understand?
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is a Percolated Media production. All rights reserved, and no copyright infringement is intended.
Call it the Death Star. There is no better name, and the day is coming soon when it will be unleashed.
You want to get out of here?
This thing crossed a billion?
Yeah, it did.
Wow.
You gotta realize, it was the second Star Wars.
In 2 years. Okay, Goudreau.
I mean, the other one grossed two, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this did come out like right around Christmas, which always helps.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Because this movie screams, bring the whole family.
You hear there's going to be a movie a year. You're excited to take your kids to Star Wars movies again, but one a year? Were you excited for that?
Was because the off stories, the anthologies, were supposed to be... Sorry, excuse me. Cough button. Because the other stories were supposed to be...
We cut to 15 years later on the Ring of Kafreen. Kafreen, that's how you say that, right?
I have no fucking clue.
I'm asking Adam, actually. We'll go with it. Okay.
Sure.
We cut to 15 years later on the Ring of Kafreen.
So they need her to go see Saw because she could at least get an audience with him. But ultimately, they need her to go get the pilot to get the message because it's connected to her father. I am very confused by exactly what they want her to do. Because ultimately their priority is to get her father, but even that gets not as it seems. It's just, for something that is so simple, God, this movie's fucking convoluted.
It is, to a T. Adam?
Sorry, I'm over here laughing because Matt said they need to get her to Seesaw. I'm just thinking of Seesaw.
Nice. We're learning a little bit more about K2SO as Andor is giving orders to kill Galen if he sees him.
This type of stuff right here. But it brings me to a place that I wish we got more of, and that's to the planet where they're stripping it, Jeddah.
What's your problem there?
I think we lost him.
Oh, God damn it. That was a great thought.
Hello?
Yeah. No, you're good. Okay, go ahead. What's your problem with that?
Was I completely cut out?
Yeah, you cut out for right after you said...
You said my issues on Jeddah, and then you stopped.
You stopped.
Oh, God damn it. No, it brings me to one of the parts that I like. There's a big swath of people that put this as their favorite.
Yeah. I hear people put this as their second favorite all the time. Okay, I was going to say something else, but I completely forgot. Okay, I'll just move on with the plot here. So Saw's trying to get into the head of Bodhi. As they run into Chirrut. They run into Chirrut.
Oh, God, that was so overplayed.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm like, that's not Luke, I am your father, I'm sorry. Stop trying, I'm like Peter Griffin, where it's like, who sings that song? James Taylor. Let's keep it that way.
Jesus, we're pulling out all the references today.
Oh, yes. Well, Seth MacFarlane made a career in a lot of ways out of those Star Wars Family Guy parodies.
Yep.
Kept the show going. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look, between him and Seth Green, because, you know, he's the Robot Chicken guy, and God, that show got more mileage out of Star Wars than Disney has. I immediately recognize as he's walking out. It's a skinny-ass guy in the suit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. He's not imposing at all.
Got the same issue in the Obi-Wan Kenobi series. Guess what, Hayden? I agree. You've earned the right to wear the suit, but you don't look... You're no David Prowse, sir.
So,
go
ahead.
Sorry, no, go ahead, because I may finish where you go.
Okay. So, Krennic stands as...
I'm so sick of the word Stardust, I can't even watch the Gale, or sorry, the fuck, god damn it, I fucked it up, never mind. I was going to make the Stardust movie joke.
Yeah, and I felt bad, this came out the same year David Bowie died.
That's a terrible movie, by the way, too.
This is the first Star Wars movie, up to this point, and maybe in the entire series, who knows, that I could say I actively hate. I'm giving this a 3 on 10.
Wow, 3 on 10. I will give my thoughts as soon as I take a leak. I'll be right back.
Should have just played the Imperial March while you were going to take a leak.
No kidding.